Hello, everyone, and welcome to this meeting of the Emergency Preparedness Committee of the Kensington Fire Protection District Board of Directors. It is July 25th at 4:07 p.m. We're in the Kensington Community Center, Room 3, and let's call the meeting to order. Director Madugo.
Here.
And I'm Director Levine. Public members, Doug Bevington.
Here.
Lisa Corona.
Here.
Kitty Gluck.
Here.
Adrian Johnson.
Here.
Peter Liddell.
Here.
We'll be with Paul, and Dave Spath is not here. So Paul is going to be joining us remotely under the new Brown Act rules. I forget what they're called. There's a law.
I'm here.
And we need to vote to allow him to join. So.
And it's just due to health reasons.
Yeah, so. Due to health reasons under the new law. So we allow for the remote. Can you mute yourself? You got that? I move that we allow the remote participation of Paul Moss.
Second.
Great. Discussion? We don't need to.
Did you tell anything? Did you speak about yourself? Did this happen at the last meeting?
He's joining remotely because of health reasons.
Sorry?
He's joining remotely because of health reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Under the new rule.
Yeah.
So that's a new.
New-ish.
A couple of months.
Okay. Yeah. So there's now a couple of reasons where you can join a Brown Act. Sorry, this is a motion. All in favor?
Yes.
Aye. Okay. Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 7 to 0. Yes, under they revised the Brown Act, so you can participate remotely in meetings. If you are having a health issue, or if you're caring for someone who is having a health issue, or there's another one. Oh, you're out of district on official business, for the
district.
Yeah, like if the district had sent Paul to CSDA training or something, you can join from the training. So yes, if you have COVID and you want to participate, or any disease and you want to participate, but you are infectious, you should feel free to participate under the new Brown Act rules.
And then if I wasn't for caring for children, or did the children have to be health reason?
I'll send out the kind of summary of that so that everybody will have it, because we do have some new members, so you'll know. I can't remember the specifics related to caring for others, but it's this.
Yeah. I did participate, well, I guess it doesn't, I participated remotely on the meeting when my son was born, but that was because I was caring for my son and the wife in the hospital. So I guess that was a health reason. yes, okay, moving on to public comment. Members of the public would like to make comments to the committee for any items not listed on the agenda. You're the only member of the public here, so. okay, anyone else on the committee wanna bring up something not on the agenda? All right, moving right along.
Okay. I just shared the password for you. It should come up. No, just asked me to share it with you, and I said yes.
Oh.
That's the easiest way to do it.
Yeah.
And where is that gonna show up online?
I think it just automatically happens.
It's still trying to mention
that.
Everybody got to have the handouts ready for the emergency preparedness for the National Night Out.
Yeah, Johnny, you're going to touch on National Night Out during your report? Awesome.
Short answer, yes.
Short answer is yes. But I think he knows more than he does. Adoption of consent items. This is the approval of our minutes from our last meeting. So they're attached to the packet. Did anyone want to remove the minutes from the consent calendar, or we can just adopt them? All right. Would anyone like to make a motion to accept the consent calendar?
Motion to accept the consent calendar as is.
Second.
I second it.
Awesome. 4 seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries 8-0. Continuing to move along. We move to, yes, old business, the replanting grant. So we talked about this briefly at the June meeting. The idea is that the replanting grants are great, except that the problem that most people have is not the replanting, it's the removal of the hazardous vegetation in the first place. And since the district has more of a of a desire to remove hazardous vegetation, we discussed we should maybe revise the grant program to be able to be used for that. So we had some feedback last time, was updated. Someone besides me, what say you about the new, Lisa?
Yeah, Tony, do you want me to start off on this?
Yeah, you can do an introductory, and then I have some stuff I can provide some more structure to it as well, if you'd like.
Most of the issues talked about in terms of identifying the roles of people. The neighborhood lead is the person who would actually put together the grant.
Excuse me, I can't hear at all.
And their neighbors, you hear, you know, they would prepare the grant on behalf of themselves and their neighbors. The project coordinator would be the person designated by the fire district. And, you know, it seems logical that the emergency preparedness coordinator, but it could be anybody that the district wishes to oversee the program. And we've also established eligibility criteria. Should I, let me get on with this phone thing. So, let's just stop this one. Everything. Can you hear me still?
Yes.
Okay, great. So we established eligibility criteria, which I think is pretty clear here, open to Kensington parcels, focus on removal projects targeting highly flammable plant species, such as juniper, bamboo, eucalyptus. The vegetation to be removed must be, we thought between, and this is up for discussion, between about 25 feet from the house or 10 feet from the road. So one is about the house protection and one is about the evacuation and access issues. Then another criteria was to be, to give preference to applications that had more than three neighbors come together so that there's kind of a more efficiency of scale in reviewing the applications and approving the funds, that there be a designated neighborhood lead, that the grant funds are only eligible for the hazardous vegetation that has been removed after the grant's awarded, and with the project completion approval from the Kensington Fire District, Fire Protection District. And then just to be clear that it does not include grasses or targeted annual vegetation management. It's really about removing those species primarily. That it would be the potential funding details, $2,000 a parcel. Funds could be used solely for the cost of hazardous vegetation removal as approved in the application, reimbursement of the grant for verification of the project. And then it's been added by the district to allow up to 6 weeks to receive reimbursement once the application is completed. And then just a little bit about the application process here, which I don't really think I need to go into. In great detail. I think we were very concerned about just the use of public funds so that, you know, once the project, you know, is submitted, award seems like a good project, it's granted. And then we wanted to make sure that all the final approval and funding went through the district and all of it. So it was kind of like central control and it was actually proven by photographs that the work was completed and by reimbursable receipts for the work being done. So that's kind of it. I think another big question is for efficiency of doing this,
rather than have these rolling in and constantly doing this, one thing we set up was that the EPC, that there'd be like either once or twice a year that grants are submitted, so that there, we can have kind of a review of what's being submitted, that the EPC would set up a subcommittee to actually review the grants, you know, kind of go to the sites, answer questions, kind of do the legwork so it's not staff intensive, and then make a recommendation to the district about, you know, which ones are best meeting the criteria of the grant, and make recommendations based on the available funding that would be in the budget. So once or twice a year seems adequate to try to consolidate this and have it be a process versus, you know, one person and another person constantly doing this, and to use the EPC as the review agency to be ranking the submittals. So that would kind of try to, we tried to minimize the staff time that would be required, because clearly the staff has to put out the guidelines, the staff has to do the application form, advertise it, you know, all that stuff has got to be done through the staff person that's designated at the district, but a lot of the review and recommendations can come through the EPC for approval by the district. So that's kind of it. And the question is, should it be once a year? Should it be twice a year? And anything else about how many feet from the house? So anyway, that in a nutshell. So Johnny, what did I miss?
I would recommend that based on how we ran the replanting grant earlier this year, is that we had it run from beginning of the year, from January, and we had a close date on the application submittals until like the end of April, that we can, if we're having a review, that we can open this up between a January and maybe the mid-March, and then have a review period and then award the grants in April for that work to be done. So it's kind of like a open session for applications, and then close it, review it, and then we can adjust to see how much demand there is, and then reopen a second application period later on in the year, which can align with budget adjustments, or it could also align with how, you know, the environment of and people's awareness in the community for wildfire risk. So it can be done twice a year, or flexibly, depending on demand, and it can also be done on, you know, a strategic marketing as well. One of the things that that came through, there was a call that came in 2 days ago from a resident that was looking for Measure X funds. And sometimes the Measure X, it doesn't really apply to our community's needs. And I think this is what is a really good opportunity to fund something that can be relevant to the community's needs. But the Kensington paths had come up, you know, like with areas that aren't quote unquote claimed or owned, but still people in the community are responsible for these areas. Can this be worded to also apply to be applicable for some of those needs for those evacuation routes, like with the Kensington paths or those open parcels? So I just wanted to voice that up as that came up. But we did change some of the verbiage in this to to shift away from Kensington property owners to parcels, because there, or away from households also to parcels, because there are vacant lots that are owned, but there's no house on them. A number of those parcels are in FireWise areas that run up against the East Bay Regional Park District.
But Johnny, I would just add a couple of things to what you just proposed. I mean, one is, I think you need the property owner's permission to do anything mm-hmm. on their property. So right. In the end, it is owners that have to sign off on, you know, letting the work be done or agreeing mm-hmm. to have the work be done, even if they're not paying for it.
Right.
And then the other thing on the paths is kind of a more of a district legal question, because there is no real ownership of that space. So that's just something for the district to think about.
Can't touch it.
Anything else?
What would be another question? I think Mary, I had asked an email, and then we were going to bring this up for discussion, is, would we need to have a licensed business performing the work, or is this something that isn't necessary for a requirement for the application for those performing the work.
Received.
Is Mary talking?
Yeah, they can hire a landscaper. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
They can hire a landscaper that might not be a licensed business person. I mean, I'm not sure about the requirements for that, but I don't think we should, you know, have to require that, but we certainly could. That would be a decision.
What about insured? Somebody who is insured?
That's the homeowners.
Okay.
Responsibility.
They're doing the hiring? Oh, okay.
That's terrible.
So,
I have thoughts, but we'll...
As I was listening to this, I was thinking this is a...
You're going to have to speak up.
This would be great for Measure X, but then Johnny's saying that, are you saying that you don't want to use Measure X money?
It's not that we don't want to use Measure X money, it's that the Measure X has programs that aren't necessarily relevant to what we're doing. So there are criteria for Measure X to approve certain projects. And the only projects that we've been able to get funded are community chipping days. So they don't have programs for our community that we can just remove juniper from a house-to-house basis. They have certain criteria for their other wildfire mitigation programs that aren't applicable. So this is a really good opportunity for the district to fill that gap.
Paul?
Yeah, first of all, I want to extend my kudos to Lisa and Johnny. I think this is a terrific document. I really like it. I just think it's great. I have just, and also I do like the idea of a twice a year application period. And about money, I just wondered, isn't there still, hopefully, 25K budgeted for this work that was in the budget that Mary put in, what is it, Mary, about a year ago? And I don't think any or very little of it's been used.
We have budgeted, and I almost think we have it at 10,000. That's the update that I got from Tim. But we can make a budget revision if we need to in September when we do the grant budget.
Okay, I thought it was 25K. Seems like it got knocked down.
Yeah, we didn't have a lot of use last year, so I think that was the thing to just.
Yes, it was. Went down from 25 budgeted 23 in fiscal year 23-24 to 10K in 24-25.
Okay. Thank you.
Do you have more, Paul?
No, that was it. Thank you.
Hello.
Lower my hand.
I also thought this looked great. I like 2 times a year for like a close date and then a review. There's two thoughts that I had, one that's crazy and one that's crazy. So the 25 feet from a residence or 10 feet from the street, it says 10 inches in the document.
Yeah.
That begs some questions. Driveways, is that part of the residence? Decks, is that part of the residence? Or the street for that matter? So that's sort of a question that we should clarify. What counts as?
Yeah, I mean, we don't, you know, we've left it like this for this discussion exactly. It's like, what do we think is right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if we want to include decks, if we want to include driveways, that certainly is a possibility. It's, I guess the question is, what is the most important areas we want to try to tackle?
Mm-hmm.
And if they're all equally important, then they should all be there. We should just review those applications based on that criteria. So, I mean, what do people think about that? It's for discussion. Include, don't include.
I mean, well, if you say 25 feet or 10 feet from the property, then just like leave it at that. It was on this or that or the other thing. But obviously, like if there's wood is broken down and it's basically tinder, mm-hmm. and it's going to cost a couple hundred bucks to remove it, and they can't remove it themselves, then I think that's totally reasonable.
Well, this is not for deck. I mean, this is only vegetation, applies to vegetation only.
But then why are we bringing up decks?
Because define what is the residence?
Right. What's the is it the house itself? Is it the parcel?
I mean, this is like a question when they're trying to decide zone zero for defensible space. There's a somewhat active discussion. I think they've sort of resolved it, but there was an active discussion about whether or not is it 5 feet from the house and therefore decks made out of wood, all decks made out of wood therefore would be not allowed because it's a wood object next to a house.
Right.
But if they said, no, the deck is part of your house, then it's 5 feet beyond that, then the deck is allowed. You get the idea. So there was a question from that. Where's the house?
Right.
I
think we should personally be pretty flexible going into this.
Yeah.
And because we really don't know what kind of response we're even going to get. And the more stringent the controls are, people will be like, oh, this doesn't even apply to me.
Yeah.
So I think if we leave it a little more open, and then if that turns out to be problematic, we can hone it in. But your point is well taken. If somebody's deck is falling down, and they remove the shrub underneath it, is that really help anything? There's bigger. It's like the house hardening issue, I guess.
Well, the sum of the comment was what you just said, which is basically let's not make it so strict that nobody.
Yeah.
So anything within the parcel?
If you want to say focus on the house, is the thing that's fine too. But well, let me to my crazier second suggestion, which is. So in academia, when you do a grant application, you get scored, right? You don't just get did you get it or did you not? They first score all the applications, let's say there's a 5, this is a 5. Unfortunately, there isn't as much funding at the NSF to fund every level 5 project, but they start with the level 5 projects. So what I was gonna say, the crazier idea, which doesn't need to go in this, but if the EPC is reviewing it, maybe, instead of having necessarily stringent requirements on the application, you score the application and then go through them in that order and say, okay, well, we get 3 applicants and a bunch of them are right next to the house and the last one is far away, but all of that's less than 10K. Then we wouldn't say no to the person, but they're just lowest priority ranking. The other reason why this is nice is, unlike the NSF perhaps, if the EPC reviews 15 applications for this, which would exceed our current budget, you don't want to say, well, we picked the best 10K, we picked the best 5, and then the rest of them are SOL. You can go to the board and say, we have 15 level 5 projects that would be great to fund, and then it sort of concretizes for the board if they want to make a budget adjustment. There's sort of a quality metric on the application.
Are you suggesting a rubric?
Yeah. So nearness, you could say but you don't want to be too crazy.
Can we just rank them 1 to 3?
Yeah.
1 to 3 in each of the criteria categories so that we get a very simple. Yeah, of course. I mean, we can certainly generate something like that. I don't think that has to be part of the.
Yeah, just kind of, I think internally we can.
Do you want to release that information so that way people know how to craft their proposals so that they get with it?
I have some challenge if we don't have that published somehow, somewhere.
Yeah.
The criteria.
Singapore is worth 2 points.
I wouldn't get that granted. But closeness to house or public right of way is worth more points. Number of parcels involved is worth more points.
Well, we already said that.
You already said that. I'm trying to put it all into one thing. And whatever other
people involved, number of parcels involved. So that's one criteria. Distance from house. So if it's 5 feet from the house, you get more points than if it's 25.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. I think we can probably develop that. I mean, I don't know that it seems a little overkill.
That's why I said it's more crazy.
But I think we can develop it. Maybe have it in our, maybe we can develop it after we kind of move this on.
Yeah.
I don't, because each of these things.
You can say that on the eligibility criteria.
Yeah, that's right.
So I feel like you can be out of line and application will be based on the eligibility criteria and the closeness to the.
What if we did it a less granular, more flexible? Can't hear.
Sorry, what if we did it more? A less granular, more flexible approach to just boil each proposal down to overall 2 to 3 point scale, sort of high priority, medium priority, and low priority. Mm-hmm. And that would give us a basis to to say, if all funds were used up, hey, we still have high priority, or there's a lot of good, you know, medium priority things out there to represent the need properly, but without bringing too much detail into it, or too much free, just an overall 3-point scale.
So I suggest that if this is approved by the board, number one, that whoever's on the subcommittee of the EPC come back with a little more structured system, whatever it may be, and bring it back to the EPC at some point. Because this is, even if we launch this, there's going to be a huge lag time, right?
Yeah.
Between when we even get the applications in. So, and I think it's pretty clear about like what the biggest priorities are, and then it's a matter of how we're going to actually put it together. I don't think we have to fuss on that, but the people, whoever's on the subcommittee, should bring it back. Like, this is the criteria, this is going to rank 1 to 3 or some other more complicated system that I don't understand. Okay.
Paul? Yeah, I was just going to say, we had this discussion at length more than at one meeting a good 2 or 3 years ago when Larry and Kevin Padian were around. And I think we all agreed that there's no way you're going to come up with a perfect criteria. It is, I have some experience like Daniel with grants and so forth. It's tough. And one way or another, sooner or later, if enough people apply, you're going to piss somebody off who thinks that his neighbor shouldn't have gotten it before he did. I don't think we can fuss too much over this other than try to come up with a reasonable set of criteria for judging the grants and let it go. And there will be, I hope maybe, but there won't, but there could be a problem. We can deal with it, just like granting agencies do.
My thought is one of the reasons that we're doing this is because people don't have the money that they to actually get this done, that they're going to have to put out the money anyway, and then get reimbursed. Is there something that they can do where it could be piecemeal, so that way they can start getting stuff done and then reimbursed and then more, or is there
short $500 up front?
Yeah, or...
Would make sense.
Either we give them $500 up front to start, or, you know, like I said, part of the issue is people are having a hard time affording. So
that's true, but I think you're gonna have a
it's tough.
Have you like an upon request situation? Yeah, like maybe it'd be an exception. If somebody brings it up, I think it's worth considering, but.
Yeah. Maybe. Someone brings it up. So.
A clarification on that, but I didn't realize I already said it. Is it that when they apply it, they need to already spend the money, or at the point of application, have they not necessarily spent the money?
I think the way it's currently set up now is they apply for the money, then they need to document their place, then they spend the money, and then they submit the before and afters plus the receipts, and then we reimburse.
Sure.
That's generally.
Sure. We might want to be sure in the advertising to make sure people see.
Come on, that's later.
Otherwise, because a grant, yeah, it sounds like you just get
it. Right, good point. Yeah. Reimbursement. Maybe we should call it. And, you know, normally people, you know, can't really meet the grant requirements. I mean, it's usually for a low-income exemption, and then usually people do show data that qualifies for low-income and blah, 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 and it gets into, like, a lot of stuff. And, you know, maybe we can consider those if somebody knows that it's not just getting the money up front, but you actually have to be low-income to do it.
Yeah.
That would probably deter a lot of people from trying to get it in the beginning.
Yeah, you know, everybody, I don't know, like, how you would, I mean, qualifying people for low-income status is tough without, like, revealing all the private information, but, like, I think there's enough of, like, a shame factor if you don't really need it, that if you say it's for people who are low-income or on fixed income, that people will exclude themselves if they don't consider themselves within that space, for better or for worse, but.
Okay, so we call it a reimbursement grant program and leave it at that, see how it goes. Yeah. And deal with it if somebody has a real hardship.
Yeah, I think that makes sense to me.
Good. Any other good comments?
I think it looks great.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so with this, so with these comments, two times a year, EPC to set up criteria with a little more structure, and calling it a reimbursement grant program. Do we have a motion to approve this and move it forward to the board?
Would you like to make that motion?
I would like to make that motion. I will make the corrections to this document too.
I'll second it.
Was that Paul second?
Yeah. Great.
Thank you. Public comment. Make sure.
I'm sorry.
Oh yeah.
Before we take a vote, there was also the issue of describing what the house is. Should it include all structures on the property, 25 feet? That would include decks and sheds and things, or should we just say residence and keep it at that and see what we get?
I would say lots.
The lots.
Okay, yeah. That's what we have. Good.
All right. Seeing no public comment. Let's vote. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Abstentions? Motion carries 8-0.
Great.
Thank you very much, Johnny and Lisa.
Thank you, Lisa, for helping drive this. We got this ahead of schedule.
Yeah, no, you were jammed too. When do you need the final document?
To the board.
To the next board meeting. Sure. Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's the week before the meeting, which is August 21st, I want to say.
Yeah, so August
14th. Okay, easy. No problem.
August 14th, 2 p.m.
Or whatever. Yeah. I'll get it before.
Okay. Yeah. As soon as you got it, send it.
Yeah, just okay. As long as I have enough time. That's all.
Whoa, that's a new thing. Sorry, my computer did something strange. Danielle, this is your item. Report on the Contra Costa civil grand jury about the community warning system in the county.
Okay, we talked a little bit about this at the last meeting, but we finally got a chance to get it or look at it. I had a chance to look at it, and I wanted everyone else to have a chance to look at it before we discuss it. So let's discuss this. I found there to be many concerning issues in this document should. I can start, or anyone else can start. I mean, I know you had some comments, I thought. And Dave did too. I'm sad he's not here.
No. I mean, I read all the recommendations and their findings. I thought they were really good. I just commented that grand juries are made up of citizens, that citizens sometimes have great expertise, and sometimes they learn everything on the subject while they're on the grand jury, depending on how the committees are set up. And I just wanted to say that the agency that they're, or the agencies, as the case may be, have an opportunity and a time limit to respond. And I think it would be helpful to hear those responses but clearly a lot of their findings were unique to Contra Costa versus what other agencies do. And that was very concerning.
Yes.
So that's my only real comment. I thought it was a good report.
And would that would be in what, 6 months or whatever?
Oh no, we said it was
like 90 days. Weeks. Something like that, or
yeah.
Maybe it was 60. Yeah,
wasn't that?
We looked it up.
Yeah, it was
not
reasonable.
Long. Yeah,
right.
Is there a way for people to make sure that a response includes something that they're concerned about? You know, like for instance, can a member of the public who reads this suggest to the agency who needs to respond, hey, can you also address this since you're going to be addressing this other stuff too?
You can certainly do that. The public person, they will likely not respond.
I know.
Because they're just required to respond. They must respond to the grand jury. And you cannot add information to the grand jury's report. That's certainly not allowed. So they probably, I mean, it would probably be better to just do a public record you know, request or letter to the agency directly and see what they say. That's my opinion.
Okay.
I don't think you can, you can certainly support the findings and, you know, respond to that and you can make whatever comments you want. I'm not sure who all will respond.
Okay. I just wondered what the process was for the public's involvement. You know, in terms of
I don't think there was what happens is once these come out, then the newspapers pick it up and, you know, it's kind of more of a general information thing. And then sometimes the community gets upset or interested and, you know, can do stuff, but I don't know how that actually impacts what the agency response has to do.
Got it. Well, I think they usually put it through their agency agenda, right? I think that they would do that, not just necessarily post to their website, but it would go through an agenda.
Yeah, they have to respond and then it goes back to the agency.
Receipt to their governing body, the report,
right.
And then good time for another number to
maybe respond.
That's great. Okay,
that's true.
Thank you. I don't know if you guys had a chance to read through it or not, but I was really struck by how they gave all the plants the requirements and chemical the power to run it themselves, but everybody else is just has to run through them. It's only three people who are trained to do this. Well, plus three, it wasn't very clear. Like they said, there were three people who are responsible in the case they were needed to send out an evacuation. And they had 10 minutes to do it. I mean, so by the time our incident commander at the fire, our fire district, our fire department calls, did you see the table of what happens?
Yeah.
It's going to be 15 to 20 minutes, and they're saying they're allowing 20 minutes in order for it to actually go out. By the time that happens, the fire is reaching your doorsteps. So that is, I shared that with the Wildcat Watch, and they were also very concerned as soon as we give it the fire dispatch is going to essentially, almost issue the evacuation warning as fast as possible, but it could be after 10 minutes after that. So that's the other thing was, this back and forth call to sheriff and then leaving a phone number, and then the person calls the incident commander back by telephone. And given how cell service in Kensington is seamless, that seems not very reliable in itself.
I can get the BBC to work on my phone. I'm concerned about the rest of us, And I have T-Mobile. I don't have AT&T.
Yeah, no, AT&T sucks. It's terrible. My Verizon, actually, for my work phone, is also terrible.
Yeah.
So,
I currently have 0 bars.
Yeah. Are you on SOS mode?
I am on SOS only.
Yeah.
Maybe the answer is we
get
a cell tower. I know
they're
ugly.
I would love that.
Can I speak to that last point that Danielle was discussing?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. Is it okay, Danielle, or do you want to go through the list? Because I read this pretty carefully, and I thought it was a really good document and damn near damning about the CWS. We've been really lucky, as it's pointed out in this document. This system hasn't even been really tested like other counties. Look at Butte County right now. Or Colusa County, up north. We haven't had that happen. The closest thing to it, pointed out in the document, were a couple of drills in 2022 and 23, right? And most of the people didn't even get the warning that they were supposed to because they were registered. And then you combine that with the fact that only 30%, I had to look twice to believe that. Only 30% of the people in Contra Costa County are signed up for this. And as far as, that's terrible. That's really bad. They better go after that. And that's why I think the opt-out option that they're appointing is much better than the opt-in. And if you read the document, you know what I'm talking about. And to your point, Danielle, about discussing the problem with getting hold of the duty officer, That's another thing that just really gets to me. I just have to lean on my experience with the search and rescue. We have something called the BOO phone. BOO stands for Base of Operations. And the person that has it is usually the search manager, the incident commander, somebody like that. And that phone never, from the time a search is initiated at the right away, that phone does not get left behind, put down, left in a vehicle or anything. We even had one incident, it's a little bit on the funny side, where a guy got a call on that BOO phone that was important information for our search mission at the time. And he was in the bathroom at the time, which is a porta potty, and he came bursting out of that bathroom with toilet paper stuck to the bottom of his shoes to give us the message. In other words, it was treated with super high priority. Why all the other counties don't let that happen where they only have one person respond, a duty officer? There should never be anything like that. That's why I invoked the example of the search and rescue BOO phone. You just don't want that. And I think they're really strong about they better. You want to have two or three people that if the guy that has to be reached for some reason that frankly shouldn't happen, can't be reached, somebody else is right there and can deal with it. And it shouldn't take 10 minutes.
I mean, I think that if they're willing to train refineries and chemical plants, I don't see why our sheriff, who's responsible for evacuation warnings anyway, or evacuation calls anyway, can't be trained to do that. Dispatch right. Can't be trained to do that.
It sounds like they have three people there as backups already, but one thing was a little fuzzy for me, maybe you saw it in here. It sounds like they don't have maybe the right word is the authority to call for evacuation, but they're there and they're trained. So their status, so to speak, in terms of making decisions, to me just seems to be needs to be elevated. That's just one suggestion. There might be better ways. But in terms of what they observed here, these findings are really serious. I mean, I think. And the county has just lucked out because we haven't had a fire so far where this would really show up. And so what are we waiting for? If something to happen? So I hope all these, I think both the findings and all the recommendations are really pretty good, and hopefully we'll get followed up on ASAP.
I have to say that also, I'm not sure that's the exact protocol that actually happens, because when I was listening to when there was the fire a couple of years ago, right close to the Carquinez Bridge, and I was listening to Pulse Point and fire dispatch, and it was the fire, the IC commander, for the fire that said, told his fire dispatch, I need you to evacuate zone blah, 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 blah. And so I presume, and this is has to be an assumption, I presume that the fire dispatch called CWS. I should actually ask sailors, although I don't think he would know. So I presume that it was the dispatch I called CWS to get that evacuation order, but I remember it was the fire incident command who was requesting the evacuation, and it wasn't clear who was notifying CWS. I just remember the orders coming in. So who knows actually how this gets implemented? I know we see it here, but there are so many different ways they could actually do it. Since it's not practice, it doesn't seem. They said it's not tested. I'm sure it's not tested. And considering the example of the Canyon fire last year or this year, where the delay in the evacuation for Canyon happened after the fire was under control, is beyond, requires so many benefits that, I mean, it shouldn't be happening now. So it's clear that when jurisdiction is unclear, that we're definitely going to lose lives. And I think they really need to get their act together and protocol and train more people. That's
my I agree.
Yeah.
I thought it was really interesting that they used other communities, counties used the dispatch center as the kind of like authority, you know, with the capability to act quickly, because they're there 24/7.
That makes sense.
And I thought that was brilliant. Yeah. I mean, you know, they're trained and they're reading from some text given them, you know, then they can move forward. It's not like, wait 10 minutes, that can't get that guy, wait 10 more minutes, can't get that guy, you know, it's horrible. absorb and scare.
She doesn't have service.
Yeah, he's here.
Yeah. So what is the, given this report, like what are options?
I mean, that's what I was asking about. What can the public do?
No, I don't know what we can do. Except really support this, and the board should support the work that the findings and the recommendations. I had the same thought. What can we do? Well, probably not much except push as a public entity to get this, get attention to this thing. It's really pretty dangerous. You know, 30% of the people, in other words, if the system worked perfectly right now, but only had 30% of the public enrolled in it, it's not going to work. Period. How can it?
I mean, I think the most effective thing that can happen is for the district board to firmly support the finding, concern about issues raised, concern about, like some like really strong statement to say these are real, these issues matter to us, this is a priority. We, trust that the county will, take this seriously and make change that implements a better, more functioning, blah, 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 blah. You know what I mean? I think if the board does that, that's the most powerful thing, because you're an agency.
Okay.
And you're not just one
statement.
You make a
risk. We are very concerned.
Sure.
Yeah, so related to that, I mean, one of the things that I thought was most striking is, there's a sizable discussion of LRADs, which is a thing that our board has literally considered undertaking, and we were sort of, unsure about what the next steps were at a board level. But the point is, this study recommends that the county be involved in doing this sound study to figure out whether these things are relevant or not. And so, our board's actual operations in terms of we were thinking, should we get LRAD, is directly impacted by whether or not the county is responsive to this grantor report.
Yeah.
So from that perspective, I think it's already sort of in the board already has an interest explicitly stated in some of what's in this grantor report. So I think it is totally reasonable to bring it to the board and seek a resolution, if not necessarily endorsing all of it, but at least endorsing the parts of it that are directly related to things, capital projects that the district has considered undertaking. How do I say this diplomatically? Our board is very deliberative right now.
Mm-hmm.
And my only concern is the scope, is if we try to ask the board to have a resolution endorsing the entire grand jury report in its entirety, that will not go well. So if we want to make a specific request from this committee about a specific resolution or something that we would like the district to do that's somewhat narrow in scope, that could be tractable in one of our meetings. I think that is a thing that could be done. I don't know, I'm now rambling. I'm thinking out loud as I'm going, but.
I had a thought to that. In that report, it wanted the county, it said move forward with acoustic study with Measure X funds and then get feedback. Oh, so that they recommended that the county move forward with at least doing an acoustic study for the entire county.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. And so for us, that what we've been thinking about is, what if we actually did start do a request an acoustic study and then get Measure X grant funding for it, and then we could go for the installation via FEMA. I mean, again, we're getting ahead, because if the county is going to move in this direction, then we probably want them to pay for it.
Yeah.
But the county is paying for it if we use Measure X funds for at least acoustic study. We could actually offer to be part of that study, or maybe if the county says they don't want to do the whole county, but they'll do the entire county, we should be out there first and being like us.
Okay. Now you are referring to the LRADs here with the studies, right?
Yes.
Well, how about if we already have FEMA money available to us, which I believe we do. Okay, I don't, I'd been speaking to, and this was last year when we were, when it looked like we were really moving ahead with it, like people were still, I mean, it, to me, it's just been lying dormant. We've done nothing with it. Mm-hmm. I don't know when we froze up on it, but anyway, I've been speaking to an attorney in Washington, D.C., who does FEMA grants, okay, and she had a couple of FEMA grants lined up for us at that time. Now, of course, grants, you got to hop on right away, they come and go, right? And there was one in particular at that time, but that's gone now, that was appropriate for us because it dealt especially with special districts like us, and there aren't that many of us around. And that would have covered everything, mm-hmm. everything. Okay. And all we had to do is fill out this memo paperwork, which she's going to work with us pro bono. Okay, so it just keeps getting sweeter. All we have to do is get off our tushies and say, let's do this. Like, take a meeting with her, okay? If you're interested in doing this, maybe we can get the whole thing paid for instead of just talking about it. Let's talk to somebody who can actually make this come to fruition. Somebody who's got, who has the ability, okay, to make this happen.
Okay, should just we, so should the EPC recommend that the board get in contact with this lawyer grandfather?
What I would suggest that, well, what I would like to do, what I'm going to do, and maybe she's retired now, I don't know, wait. If you're interested in this, I'll call and see if the deal's still on the table, and she would do this pro bono. And what are the grants looking like at this time? Have things dried up, or have, are there more things on to do some things or whatever? And see, and then if there's something that we can do, and it's like, maybe we don't have to put any money up. That happens too, you know. Mm-hmm. Okay, the pass on something like that would be, I mean, stupid. Okay, grab it. You know, something like that comes along, you cover it up, and you keep it warm. And say, I remember to say thank you. So shall I do that?
I'm afraid I didn't fully follow all of that.
So, but I would say follow up with the lawyer, see if he's working, and then if they are still working, then maybe they can speak to the board via a meeting or on a one-on-one basis, just as a screening.
Well, let's see what's available.
Yeah, let's start there and we'll go from there.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, talking to staff is probably the sensible first step, but I don't want to commit.
Yeah, and what? One of the components of what we were waiting for is the local hazard mitigation plan, and we got notification that Cal OES and FEMA are looking at it, reviewing it in tandem. So they expect comments back within 45 days, so at least we know that's coming closely to finally being.
Yeah.
So that's one thing we need.
So I think, well, I'll mention that to her as well. That's okay. Yeah, I've there. Yeah, let me see what's going on first before, and then I'll give you the information what's happening. Yeah. Has a mitigation plan. That has to pass with FEMA, with the county, and then the board is has to pass. So it hasn't passed everything yet.
At least.
Yeah. Okay, but at least it's been submitted. Was it submitted on time?
Oh yeah, we there were a couple of agencies and we were listed as one of the ones that were, the fire chief mentioned that we had gotten our information to them. A lot of agencies that were still
hanging.
So I think it was just a big undertaking.
Do you know
if
the police board get this?
Yeah. Oh, they got
it. And on
time? Oh, yeah.
Oh, good. Because
they have people who haven't done.
Yeah, because they're already tired about that. Mm-hmm. And that's good. Good.
Okay. That's kind of for this, too, right?
I guess the question is, you know, does somebody want to do a draft of, I mean, because you're going to follow up with the person and get back. And so then the question is, you know, somebody want to do a draft of an item to bring to the board, like, you know, basically state what which findings are most relevant to us and why they're so important to resolve. You know, the limited scope that this stuff we've talked about or so blatantly obvious, I would say it would have that. Anyway, you know, and then bring it back to this committee. So is that what we said the next step would be?
Yeah, that's fine. If you, I don't know, if you want to point me to those major points, then I can put it into a resolution.
I think the major one, as I saw it from where I'm sitting, is recommendation R3. By December 31st, 2024, the Board of Supervisors should commission a sound study by an independent third party to determine the feasibility of deploying LRADs in any areas of the county. It's derivative of a finding earlier, which is here, finding F12 through F16. Which basically says LRADs might be a good idea. We should figure out where this LRAD should go. The county should pay for the sound study to figure out where they should go. And we as the grand jury have no idea how much that actually costs.
What about F11?
What is F11?
Outdoor warning.
Oh yeah, sure. And F11.
Well, R3, 4, and 5 sort of summarize those. So you could write it like R3 through 5. That's saying basically the sound study, train employees at the dispatch center, and implement a plan to conduct testing.
I guess R4 and R5 are more about ways to improve CWS than LRAD specifically, but...
Oh, I see.
But
that's part of the impetus for
But yeah, so we could, R4 and R5 also.
As I recall in the...
I think R4, we have to do.
So that's Genesis sends out their acoustic engineers and does all that, and that's all included.
Sure, but that's not a third party. That's a company that's trying to get you to buy LRADs.
Well, I mean, yeah, okay.
Paul, your hand is up.
Yeah. By the way, Mary, I'm only seeing your name on the screen. I really like you, but I wonder if I could get the full picture on the screen instead of just one person's name. I don't know how that happened. There it is. Thanks. Okay. There was one potential silver lining on this report, which I wondered about. I don't know what other people think, is that I did see a small opportunity here, and that is that I don't know how you get this kind of information across the public without alarming them a lot. But at the same time, I don't know if you can see on your screen, this was already published in the East Bay Times about, I think this is probably 2 weeks old now. So at least in that newspaper group, that's what I think it's called, the East Bay News Group or something like that. So it goes to several papers. It's out there. But in terms of at least maybe getting some more immediate enrollment in information dissemination systems, use this to really promote more enrollment from whatever it is now. And I tried to find out once, and it's almost impossible, what the enrollment is for NCSL, because it's a redundancy. Redundancy is mentioned many times in this report. And it's another method of communications, but at least for the time being, I don't know what to call it, not a backup. You don't want to make it formal, but it's another methods of communication in case something happens tonight and the CWS falls into all these traps that have been delineated in this report. We have another system. And the trouble is we don't know what percent of Kensington residents, for example, are enrolled. We have a good idea what percent of the people in Kensington are enrolled with the CWS. And that's very high and way above what the county is apparently. But NCSL, we don't know. I mean, I admit I have some kind of a weird interest in the NCSL thing because I brought it to Kensington about 7 years ago. They didn't even know what it was then. And promote the, you know, for redundancy purposes. I mean, is there such a thing really as unnecessary redundancy when it comes to safety? I don't think so. So just something else. I'm going on and on about it, but I think a push by this committee and Johnny in particular to make sure that the enrollment for NCSL is at least as high as we could hope it would be. And that should be as high as the CWS. Just as easy to do. I mean, you plug in 888-777 into your cell phone, add your zip code, you're done. You're registered with NCSL. What more could I just, I, you can do it in 15 seconds. And anyway, I'll back off. Sorry.
Maybe that's the, one of the block party things you were talking about before. Maybe that's something that you can do.
We are. Johnny and I, we can talk about that.
It's easier to send people the text when you like know who they are. Like I would send it to people on my block. That's how we got our street repaid. But like, I know that that kind of like smaller group pod format of dissemination might work better. But like, I know me personally, like, I walk by the newspapers and I look at the news on my phone. So I frankly, like, wouldn't have known any of this existed before I attended these meetings. And I think some of that's just generational and also just like people are wrapped up in their own stuff, you know? So I do think that like making people aware of it vis-a-vis social media / you know, the block parties is a good idea.
We could also, I've always wondered why we don't have a regular column in the Outlook. I mean, people do read the Outlook, and just if there was a little blurb, I mean, it's 10 times a year to say, hey, have you do one thing? I mean, not that
we did have that.
We did that. I did that. Johnny did it for a year and a half.
Yeah. Well, it didn't keep going. I was thinking
people
something.
Don't read newspapers.
I was thinking, but I just mean like it doesn't need to be a long thing, but a short thing consistently.
We did.
Yeah, we did it.
But it stopped, I guess, at that point.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I can get like my neighbor's daughter to make a TikTok about it.
Oh, there you go.
Part of the problem.
Yeah, no, I just read about Kamala's TikTok things that's been going nuts, and I'm like,
it's really big.
Oh, my.
Daniel, part of the problem was that the ad that our little blurbs you're talking about, it was roughly one paragraph. I don't think I ever had more than 150 words or less even. And I think Johnny had the same thing. The newspaper, the Outlook, put it on the second page of the newspaper, which was surrounded by ads. I don't know if anybody noticed that. That's why it didn't get read very often. I got frustrated. They wouldn't move it. I asked her, please put this in a prominent place. And she did go to the effort to highlight it. She colored it. Johnny, correct me if I'm saying something that isn't right or anything, but she colored it and it was kind of circled, but it was buried around a bunch of ads for, you know, a good place to buy tires or something. It was not noticed. I asked people in my neighborhood and very few people were aware of it. So if we do something like that, we got to make sure it doesn't end up in the middle of a bunch of ads for delicatessens and whatever. Okay.
I will add that even with our print material, the trackable actions that we get back from like the Fireplug, and even with the Outlook, it's low return. Where we're seeing the biggest return on emergency preparedness actions is through the establishment of FireWise communities and these block parties where FireWise communities are starting to spring out from. So I think with National Night Out, of us having 17 block parties registered this year, we're going to see an uptick on awareness. So it's getting there.
It is.
When I first started, we had less than 100, 150 people subscribed to the Kensington Fire District's newsletters for meetings and agendas. And we have over 840 something people requesting red flag emails now. So that's quite a jump in people that we can reach. So it's taking some time, but we can reach people on a much more direct basis now without having to go through social media. But we're also getting people increased awareness on social media as well over time.
Is there anything else we want to say about the civil grand jury report?
One thing I think personally should be encouraging is that I was surprised. I don't have a good feel for this, but nevertheless was just surprised that it was only going to cost about $100K a year to maintain an opt-out program for notification and $500K to get it initiated the first year for education, all that. That seems to me, and perhaps people with more familiar with city management, everything like Lisa, could say something about this, but I think that's a pretty cheap price to pay to have a lot more, maybe double to triple the number of people enrolled for the CWS, because they weren't even asked. You just put them on the system and then they have to opt out if they don't want it. I like that. And I thought the cost was really minimal to do that.
And in order to justify it, they quoted FEMA saying the cost of a life is $7.5 million.
That's right, right. Got it.
Wow. I wish I was worth that much.
Yeah. Glad they didn't include me. That would have lowered the number, I think.
Okay. Public comment on this item.
Give me a chance next time. I will Google that person next time. I'll be a member.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, do you want to say anything now?
No, I'm just listening.
Okay.
Yeah, I will catch up to do. Yeah.
No problem.
I mean, I guess the only thing I was curious about when we got to the county civil jury, is that somebody that they called you for something, or just everybody gets that booked in?
I don't know actually how the civil grand jury gets chosen.
Civil grand juries get chosen by people applying to the county. You have to apply at the county organization or entity,
yes,
or something.
Yeah.
People apply, and then what they do is they put all of the application names that qualify into a drum, and you go to court in Martinez, and they pull names out of the drum, and they have, I think, is it 12 members and 3 alternates or something close to that, and those are the people who are on the grand jury. No, you have to apply. You don't just like, it's not a random thing. You have to want to.
It sounds serious, though.
It does, doesn't it? It's
like a job.
Otherwise,
yes. I think so. Yes.
All right.
Daniel?
Yes.
One thing, I'm sorry, I'm having a little bit of trouble with the sound, so I don't catch everything. I didn't want to keep interrupting. But did I hear that the board will or will not draft something, a short note to, I guess the Board of Supervisors might be most appropriate right now, supporting the findings and recommendations of this report? I would think that's an awfully good idea, but I didn't quite hear the discussion.
I believe Mary is going to draft a resolution that will be brought to the board, and we can do that, go from there and see what that gets us.
Yeah.
Super.
So,
thanks.
Going to the board, or is it going to come here first for discussion, or are we just going directly to the board? We wanted to come back here again, but I know the points that we wanted to come this.
Yeah. I think I can just go right to the board.
Okay.
All right. EPC work plan activity updates. So we have our work plan here. We actually have, we just made some motion in the direction for LRADS, item number 5 on our list. The evacuation plan package that's been mailed out, and Johnny's going to tell us, I guess, in his report, which is coming up shortly, about sort of the National Night Out component of that as well. As Paul knows, because he already emailed to me about it, we did surface our discussion from last month to the chief. That when the firefighters go out on National Night to also bring up the specific points that we wanted to sort of hammer home for the residents. So that was discussed at the July regular meeting of the board. Is there anything else on the evacuation plan package developments?
Yeah, I do. Daniel, I did want to thank you very much for bringing that up in a very nice way that I would have had trouble finding the right words to get the request across to the chief and yet not be telling him what to do at the same time. But that's good. And I think we're very hopeful, but and Johnny might want to address this a little more because we talked about this today actually earlier because it just came up. We're not sure yet. I'm going to find out within the next day or two here for sure. I just became aware of this, that although one of our committee members, David Spath, talked to the GM for the KPPCSD, David Aranda, and asked him to, as you did, Daniel, talk to Chief Ganzes about the police participation. And we're not sure yet that that has been, that information or request, whatever you want to call it, has been conveyed. And that's critical to me. I mean, that really alarmed me when I heard that. Now, admittedly, NNO is still, what, just close to 2 weeks away. There's time to rectify that. But we have some indication that the police may be a little, I don't know, Johnny, help me find the right words, reluctant to be confrontational with citizens and tell them, you know, what to do. Like, just, but we just don't want them going around saying we're here to help you, doing this every year. I've heard the same thing, you know, about how we're here to help you in the afternoon, and they like to have some of the food on that night. They need to be proactive. And I have a lot of confidence from what Sailor said that he will be, and his battalion chiefs and so forth that go around to these national night outs will also do that. I'm just not so sure about the cops, frankly. And that's critical because who's responsible for evacuation? It's not fire, it's the police, it's law enforcement, all the way up and down. So the fire people are fighting a fire. They don't. And so anyway, I just hope that works out. Johnny may have more to say about it too.
I can touch on that briefly. I'll show you the documents that I put together for delivering out to each of the sites. But the both of the chiefs reviewed the message, and especially the police chief did review the document for the talking points, and he approved of it, and you know, he was pretty enthusiastic about the message as well. So I think it's just a matter of sending out a follow-up to of the plan out to the departments, and then as for it to be filtered down to staff.
To the departments? What do you mean by that, Johnny?
To both police and fire chief.
Oh, you know, okay.
The materials came in, and just to reiterate the intent of those posters that were designed.
Yeah, that hopefully the posters just won't be standalone things by themselves and they'll talk about something else. I mean, I think they need to be goosed if necessary to speak up, use their clout. I remember when I brought this up at, I think, the meeting before last with this group, that a uniform has a lot of clout in this case. That's why I could do it, but I just, you know, I got my t-shirt on. I mean, they're used to me, but somebody from the police department needs to speak up proactively, and that poster, I hope, just won't stand there by itself and not get much attention. That's my concern. And we've talked about it. Okay, sorry.
So, East Bay Park District update.
Okay, I just want to clarify, this is a good point. My name is here as a lead, and that was because I was involved with Paul and David Spath to develop the questions and talking points that the board was going to request. And forwarded those to the, I'm sorry, I'm blank, Tim?
Yeah.
To Tim, and he kind of led that session with East Bay Regional Parks. Just when we developed those questions, I also sent them to Tom, who was very vocal, who applied for the position here, as well as to Ciara. Mm-hmm. And Tom did get back to me, so his comments were also incorporated into what we gave to Tim. So that task was completed, and I don't think I signed up for anything else, unless I'm forgetting something. Okay, so my name is probably
not. Yeah, we'll remove Lisa from Weed Member on that. I think our status is we still haven't executed a consulting contract with Tim to continue with this work. It's been a very busy time on the board right now.
Well, and because we plan to talk about that as part of the strategic goals, and I think there are ideas on how to handle it. So I'm not sure what the action is going to be. So they had talked about doing it, and then they talked about incorporating any kind of agreement into the discussion on strategic goals, which we haven't gone through yet.
Gotcha.
So next meeting.
So it will be a jam-packed meeting. CERT. Well, we sort of put a pin in this one because it seems like CERT activities are spinning away with a sort of grassroots movement outside of this structure. I think Johnny, did you say you were going to check in with them and see where they were at? Or was that, I don't remember if that was a thing that was sort of like an idle, someone said, oh, maybe we should ask someone to check in on them, or if you actually did.
I was asked for the contact information, which I sent over.
Oh, yes.
I can reach out to them. I also know that the fire department is putting together their CERT fall course, which I think the planning was a little disrupted when some of the firefighters that were playing a key part in putting that together had to go out to a major fire. So we're hoping to have those details by mid-August to launch a public awareness campaign to sign up for the CERT course.
Great, sounds good. House hardening. Any updates?
I've been traveling for the past month.
Oh, right.
I'm on it, but we'll definitely try and have more substantive materials for the next meeting.
Sure, sounds great. Or as we just said, we're kind of moving there. Volunteer program. I don't know where we are. I don't think we're anywhere with that at this time. It's probably another deliberative board discussion to be had. So we'll see. Probably not next meeting. And evacuation drill, I think we also, the reason this is last on the list is because I think we're basically have a pin in this also for lack of resources right now.
Hi. Wait, no, go ahead, Danielle. Go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, that grand jury report said CWS has not done a drill with sending out a message. And I was kind of surprised by that because, you know, we've had a drill here. And although I guess that was led by our fire district and not CWS. So I'm wondering, maybe we should ask CWS to do like disseminate a drill message for us. So have Chief Sailors arrange that, because if Chief Sailors was the one who was in charge of disseminating the Your Zone Evacuates drill that we did, we, since CWS was not part of that, we should have CWS do it. What do you guys think? Okay.
Paul?
Yeah, to piggyback on what Danielle just said, I would agree, except that, and as pointed out in this report by the grand jury, what hasn't happened when Contra Costa County, for example, those two Richmond drills, when those were conducted, there was no follow-up on what the results were. That's horrible. I mean, why bother then? I mean, that's amazing. So if CWS is going to get involved, or even if they're not, whoever does it, whether we do it, a drill of some kind, they need follow-up on what percent of the people got the call, who responded, so forth. And it should be really pushed in that direction. I really can't see. Who runs an experiment without looking at the results, you know, and evaluating them? I just don't do that. So I think that's a biggie. And also, I've mentioned this several times before. I'm sorry to keep repeating myself, but I haven't changed my mind personally that evacuation drills are, as Arinda learned, and I had discussions with the PIO over there, Dennis Rain, they stopped them. They stopped them for a reason. They cost a lot of money. The resource demand was huge, and they just didn't see that they were getting that much out of it. So I personally, just I know nobody asked, but personally, I would much rather see a pretty organized tabletop drill. And maybe even, and this just came to mind now, so it's probably wrong, but public, at least ability to observe it or participate somehow. That is, they wouldn't be speaking up all the time. They can't. That wouldn't be an evacuation drill. That's got to be run by officials, right? Agencies. But the public could listen in, maybe. That might be hard to arrange. But I would much rather see a very organized tabletop evacuation drill, where the EOC in Contra Costa County, or if it's the Sheriff's Department, I'm part of a group that helps that, and they have these drills where only a few people know what's going to be thrown at them, and all these EOC personnel are they respond, they do their job. There's a logistics chief, you know. There's everything you can imagine. We don't have to get that elaborate, but I think that's much more feasible. That's all I'm getting at. Than an evacuation drill where a small group of people participate. They know what's coming. They know what time of morning they have to get up and get in their cars and drive down to wherever. That's not a drill. That's a parade. So, I mean, I know the public likes it, by the way. I get that. I've heard that before. I don't think the public really understands what's realistic and what's not. Go ahead.
I wasn't calling for everyone run down the drill hill. I was calling for a CWS message, kind of like the one that we had during our last evacuation, where some zones were activated. And then, you know, in that case, Johnny was able to do a poll and see how many people participated, who got the message, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I'm just kind of wondering if, well, actually, Johnny, you already have all the information of how many people in Kensington are signed up. I mean, is it worth having CWS send out a message to all of Kensington to see if they get it or not?
I think it's always worth sending a test message out so that it builds awareness, because we always have people that say, I didn't get the message. And then they also, you know, further down the line, they weren't registered. So we end up catching people because something like that happens. In 2022, CWS was involved in sending that message out. So they were involved in the planning of the evacuation drill. And I don't know why that data wasn't captured correctly in that civil grand jury report, but they were very supportive at the time and very involved in getting the messages out and sending out the poll, because I think we sent two out, the initial warning, and then we sent out a follow-up message to collect that data in the poll. So they were really helpful in getting whatever mechanisms out to the community in the messaging for us to collect that data. So if anybody needs to see that report, I can circulate that again.
Okay.
Thank you for clarifying that.
You know, something that I would like to see, and it doesn't cost anything, is just more talk about pre-evacuation to people. If you smell smoke, if it's one of those days where, you know, all the components are there, get off the hill. You know, if you're elderly, if you're disabled, if you have little children, because something happens and you're trying to gather the kids, and just take a day or two until the situation changes, and just get off the hill. Just talk. Now that the chief has given us a go ahead to say that,
Katie, that was one of the things that's in that mailer. That's one of the main 4 points. You're right. It could use a lot more talking to. I'm going to do that. I'm leaving yesterday. These days,
I know it is, Paul, and I appreciate it that it's there. But I think that people would need just word of mouth, talk about it, and plant that in people's head. Not everybody needs these things, unfortunately.
Okay.
I'll put that in the
I do appreciate the large font, though, because like now it's like sitting on the table and I sort of see it whenever I'm in that room. It's like hard to ignore.
So,
yeah, because it does say save this, so you save it.
So Katie, I have an answer to that. Talk about it. But that's one of the things we want the police and fire to bring up at the National Night Out. Not wait for somebody to ask a question, bring it up. And if they say you should leave early, and then they'll, you know, yeah, we do want to talk about it. And that's one of the frustrations we're having if the police and the fire don't follow through on what we've asked them to do.
I agree with you, Paul. They have to step up and start doing their part.
If it comes from them, it's a big deal.
The fire department in charge of evacuations. I mean, come on. It's the police. You and I know that. But a lot of people don't. And if we just talk about get off the hill and then people talking about it. And then maybe the cops will join in. They'll say, oh, wow, good talking point. Yeah, they're looking at all that.
They get paid to lead, not join. Anyway, that's my prejudice.
But no, I appreciate everything you're saying, Paul. I'm right there with you, but I'm just...
I hear you too. Okay.
So I need to interrupt.
Yes.
We have two more items.
Yes.
Left, so I'm looking to get into them.
Yes. Emergency report. Sorry, public comment. Okay. Emergency preparedness coordinator's report. Johnny.
Just one moment. Okay. Everyone can see?
Yes.
Okay, so we have August 6th, Tuesday, August 6th, we have National Night Out coming up, and I have developed a marketing device. I'm sorry?
Go into presentation mode.
I'm not in presentation mode?
Yeah, we're seeing the view for yourself, not the view for other people, so it's very small.
Oh, sorry.
Maybe you just had
hit
use slideshow.
Or... Zoom was always tricky with this. I swear they changed the buttons every time I
open
it up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I noticed something was different. Is this better?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
There you go.
Okay. Seemed to be a different option. Okay, so these are two banners, or not banners, posters. It'll be double-sided on foam core, so it's hard. And they're about 2 feet by 3 feet. So you can hold this up at the parties. And it's two messages. So 2 steps to improve wildfire evacuation. The first step is to subscribe to receive red flag warning emails. I've been pushing this because our social media engagement is very low. It's around 1% at best. The best way for us to reach the community is through direct email. So that's why we have over 800 and more than 850, maybe 800. Yeah, around 850 people subscribing to the red flag warning emails. And this is a great option because CWS will not send out red flag alerts. They're only going to send out something when it's imminent. So this is a great option for people to receive the red flag warning from the National Weather Service, and it'll include information, reminders about how to prepare and what to, you know, what to do at home to prepare for red flag in case of a fire start. So that'll be the first step. And on the backside of that is the neighborhood discussion activity where we're going to talk about the extended discussion of the wildfire evacuation campaign that we released in June on identifying ways out of Kensington from your home. And what will you bring with you? What are the hazards along the way out? And where will you stay outside of Kensington? And we can engage the community saying, you know, are you going out, you know, through Berkeley? Are you going out this direction? And we can get a lot more feedback from the community of who, you know, may need assistance. What types of hazards should we address as a street or as a community? Is there vegetation that we need to address? Is it parking changes that we need to support? So this is a great opportunity for people to start building on the discussion on a local level with each other, with first responders. So it shouldn't be a very extended or time-consuming lead-in to that point. I'm thinking it should be 3 to 5 minutes to cover both of these posters. Each of these posters will be distributed to all of the 17 registered block party sites, pre-staged. So on Sunday prior to the to National Night Out. I'll be at the temporary station from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. and I've already distributed a notification to all the block party hosts. Here, I'll go to this one. That I'll be there with the materials to pick up, and if anyone's unable to pick it up, I'll do house visits. But the police department will have 17 packs to be distributed, and I'll be handing those out on their behalf as well to be, you know, an extra pair of hands for them. So that these two posters will serve as a guideline of the message, a universal message that will go out. It's a perfect device for us to rely on. Anybody can follow this. Anybody. Like if we have a site where we don't have any first responders or any volunteers or any representatives from this committee present, I'm telling the host, please cover this. All the registration lists that we've that I've compiled for all the sites that I sent to police and fire, it has areas where I'll be. I'm trying to hit three spots. But I've identified those three areas to tell them, these are the areas where I'm going to be. Please focus on areas where you haven't been before, and try to prioritize this message. So hopefully this will cover that, that human error. Cause I know when we get to a party, responding to the public, and sometimes we get away from what our intentional message, our mission is. But this is going to be pre-staged at every site. We need to know to look for these, and I'll be working with the Black Party hosts to, you know, make sure that this is a coordinated action to get everyone's attention just for a short amount of time, and then lead into the community discussion.
Great.
Anything else on this before I go on?
Nope. Next.
Wait, I have a question. Do you need help going to the National Night Out parties?
I'm sorry?
You need help, or do you need us to help you?
Yeah, if you're already going to be in your area, please put emphasis to where you are, where you have a presence at home. I know Paul is probably going to be around Lake Drive. But yeah, if you have the ability to help out, please contact me offline.
Okay.
Because there's going to be more information coming over the next week.
Johnny's being really nice, but I think he could use what I offered to do. And I mean, and I'm sorry if I'm pushing my own agenda here, but the fact is that if he needs help going to a place where police and fire will not be able to go for whatever reason, they're short, they're, you know, they only have so many people, so many vehicles, whatever, and a limited period of time. Then I offered to, he can send me to one, and I'll go there, and I have the wrong uniform, and so forth and so on, and I'll talk if necessary, if there isn't some kind of lead there. So maybe other people on the committee would consider that. I think that's what you're talking about, Danielle. Is that correct?
If you're willing to just reach out to me in email, and then we can coordinate over the next 10 days or whatever it is.
And
the
second question is, it doesn't look like Firewise isn't having a party, or they're all in the island.
They didn't last year either, because they're having so many other touch points. So they didn't do it last year. They did a block party to launch the Firewise before National Night Out last year, and they're having so many other touch points with the community. So
okay, just wondering.
Yeah. Okay. Next. This is the map of Redtail Ridge, which is a Kensington Firewise community in development. We've started the application. It's about 131 homes, and it has about 4,100 feet, linear feet, bordering East Bay Regional Parks. So it will be the single entity of Firewise that has the longest boundary line sharing with East Bay Regional Parks. So we're in the part of the application where the fire department will go do an assessment, and that has yet to be scheduled. And this is where it is on this map. It's on the yellow section, just at the edge of the Summit Reservoir above the Tilden area. So right here, this is Redtail Ridge.
My house border there.
You're in your own, right?
No, we don't have one yet.
Oh. So coming along. I mean, to have two established in the first year and then an two others in application, I think this is pretty quick work.
Right.
Because of you, Johnny.
That's right. I second that.
I like Rich White Rich as a name. It's a good name.
Yeah.
Then Maybach Firewise had a community chipping day. This was a video that was posted to Nextdoor. I coordinated this video with Contra Costa County Fire. So I got the footage and then I edited it together and then sent it over to their public information officer to get their blessing. And then this was posted yesterday to Nextdoor. I don't know if it'll play or not. Maybe it will.
Oh, cool.
It's quick to the point. then it leads into, you know, if anybody wants any information about Measure X or, you know, establishing a Firewise community to reach out to me. So we've got a couple others that are not on the map yet. I know two other people reached out. So preliminary conversations of setting up additional ones that aren't yet on the map.
Great.
Excellent.
Anything else? That's the end of the report. So if there's any questions, let me know.
Or from the committee.
Thanks, John.
Thanks
for the good luck on National Night Out.
Echo public comment. All right, the last item here, and before we get into it, so it says reports by subcommittee. So this has been on our agenda at each of our meetings, reports by subcommittees, but we haven't been listing the subcommittees. It's unclear whether or not these subcommittees, which are our last subcommittees, are still valid and relevant. We do have the work plan now, which is sort of its own thing. So I just wanted to, the question here is not to ask everyone on these committees for an update. It's, have these committees basically been superseded by the work plan?
Yes.
Okay, great.
That's my opinion.
Did anyone else have an opinion?
I agree.
Okay, sounds good. In that case, I think we're good. Yeah. Unless there's anything else, we can be adjourned. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. Good meeting.
Thank you.